Every year around the time of the past 2 weeks, the U.S. Supreme Court receives probably the most attention it gets all year long. The rulings are seen as legal gospel by some, pure politics by others, but both sides see them as the final arbitrators. Doesn't have to be so. Not according to my next guest, who writes about how the role in law by state and even local governments hold maybe a greater potential for the rule of law overall. He is a judge who sits on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. His latest book is Who Decides? States as Laboratories of Constitutional Experimentation. We say good morning to Judge Jeffrey Sutton. Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be with you.
Great to have you here. I'm going to give the listener a fair warning. You're going to have to work a little bit with the judge's book, but when it comes to actual facts and knowledge, sometimes work is just something you have to do. Now, as far as, just for the listener right now, just for an overview, and I think, too, when you think of, I think when people are going to start reading your book, they're going to think about, well, maybe this is an explanation of why the framers created the 10th Amendment. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah. You know, when they started this out, we had 13 colonies. They became 13 states. And the question was what we do after that. And, of course, eventually we decided to have a national government with a national constitution. And the thing that's unique about American government is that you have two layers of protection. You've got the Bill of Rights, which protects the individuals and, every state in the country. But then at the same time, you've got each state has its own constitution, which protects all kinds of rights, free speech, criminal procedure, due process, you name it. And I sometimes think we forget that second half of the story. We focus so much on the U.S. Supreme Court and the U.S. Constitution that sometimes we forget that there's a second layer of rights protection out there for every citizen in the state in which they live.
You also write, too, in Who Decides That, a lot of people make the assumption, some even in elected seats of government at various levels, that local has to mirror federal, and that couldn't be more wrong.
I couldn't agree with you more. I live in Ohio. I was raised in New Jersey, but, one thing that's different, we have different tax structures. We, tax differently, spend differently. And that's the federal system. Brandeis, Louis Brandeis, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, about 100 years ago made the point that when you're dealing with a new social problem, a brave state can try this experiment, another state, a different experiment. And when the results come in, people can decide to embrace the Ohio approach, the New Jersey approach. And if a truly winning insight emerges, they can nationalize that insight. The same thing works with liberty rights, constitutional rights. The New Jersey Supreme Court can experiment in one way to protect a right, the Ohio Supreme Court in another way. And this is all very good because it gives us the second layer of protection if, say, the U.S. Supreme Court chooses not to protect a given right. And for me, that's all for the good.
Is that also what we're overlooking, too, in the rush to get whatever the issue happens to be to the Supreme Court, that we're not giving what you the various elements and options that you write about and Who Decides, we're not giving those the fair, proper amount of time for it, for those things to do the work that they were designed to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny that, we Americans love our constitutional rights, and yet somewhere along the way we forgot where they came from. The rights we debate and sometimes fight intensely about all originated in the state's constitutions. The greatest era of constitution writing was the 10 years after the Declaration of Independence and before the summer in Philadelphia in 1787. And what's funny to me is that we're not appreciating that, if we care deeply about, say, a right to choose, about equality in school funding, criminal procedure rights, claims about takings of private property. If you feel like the U.S. Supreme Court is under-enforcing or not fully appreciating those rights, those guarantees, every citizen has recourse in their state court using their own state constitution, the New Jersey Constitution, for example, to try to protect that very right. So to me, it's something we could do a little better with our civics education and discussing it and, you know, the most recent Dobbs decision kind of illustrates the point. I think some people mistakenly think the U.S. Supreme Court decision prohibits the right to have an abortion throughout the country, when that's not what it does at all. It's saying that it's up to democracy in each state to sort it out.
Or, you know, once again, brings us back to the 10th Amendment. We're talking with Judge Jeffrey Sutton. His book, Who Decides? States as Laboratories of Constitutional Experimentation. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. How big a mistake is it for people to expect a level playing field? I mean, just as an example, you can have a right to carry in Pennsylvania, but if you come into New Jersey, legally able to carry in Pennsylvania, you'll get arrested in New Jersey. And, you know, just with the Dobbs decision, there are now states looking to make it a crime to go to another state for anything related, whether it's medication abortion or surgical abortion.
Yeah, it's a big country is the first point. And, you know, the more time you spend traveling to different parts of it, the more you realize that there's going to be a different culture with respect to gun laws in, say, Montana and Wyoming versus, say, New Jersey and New York. I mean, particularly New York City. Population density might provide a good reason for different rules. So that's one point, that it's not a terrible idea in a country with 51, you know, different governments, 330 million people, very rural areas, very urban areas, to decide to have different forms of rights, or put differently, to customize those rights to the culture, history, and geography of the area. The second point you raised in that question is whether a state can punish people for traveling from one place to the other. And that's a tricky issue, and there is a federal constitutional right to travel. And so I think a state would have to be careful about punishing someone for, you know, traveling to another state. But the idea that you might have gun regulations that differ in one state versus another is no different from having fishing license rules different from one state to another, in the sense they're allowed to chart their own path so long as they honor the Second Amendment and so long as they honor any constitutional right to bear arms in that state.
What do you say to the person, because as you write about in Who Decides, local governments can be, in effect, laboratories for the execution and the review of law at the level by which the body exists. But what about those who are concerned about how many of those local governments, the more local, even more so, that are formed via a vast minority of the vote?
Well, I mean, so there's a couple possibilities there. I mean, just so one thing that's really important is the idea of cities versus states. So that's basically federalism within federalism, and there's a lot to be said for local government. I mean, that's our origin story. I mean, the idea of town government, town halls as a place to govern locally, goes back to pre-1776, and there's a lot to be said for not only giving states a lot of latitude in deciding what a government ought to look like in their state, but doing the same for cities. So that strikes me as very healthy and very American. Then you raised the point about what do we do when either local or state government or legislature is not really reflecting the majority. And that can happen in a lot of ways. So one area where there's a lot of intense political fighting is gerrymandering. And that perfectly illustrates my arguments about state constitutions. In a case called Rucho 3 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court put up a big red stop sign when it came to using the federal constitution to limit extreme partisan gerrymandering. Since 2019, one state after another has tried different experiments with respect to trying to limit extreme partisan gerrymandering, sometimes in state courts, sometimes by amending state constitutions, sometimes through state legislatures. And this is exactly the Brandeis model that I think is very American and has worked really well for us historically.
Now, what you write about in Who Decides certainly isn't a circumstance or situation formed overnight. It's been over a long period of time, as as you're right about going back to, you know, New Jersey making it first and right moves, but when you won the original 13, you get that home field advantage, I guess. But what's in your mind, one of the more important ideas that has to be achieved in the here and now to get to what you see as being needed?
Well, I think one thing that's happened the last, I don't know whether it's 50, 70 years, but there's really been a tendency to try to nationalize one's preferred right in a given area. And I understand that. If I were running an interest group, I could understand the desire to have the whole country follow my preferred approach. But I think this has actually hurt us and created more polarization. That really creates a top-down approach to government, whereas I think it's very American to have it be bottom-up, to decide, let's let local cities, towns, local states do the innovation, and if a good idea emerges, nothing prohibits Pennsylvania from adopting New Jersey's approach and then Ohio mimicking both of them once they realize it's a good idea. But that allows them to do it as a matter of choice and local government. I think it's quite a different thing to impose that choice from above, whether the U.S. Supreme Court, Congress, the president. Obviously, they have power to do that in certain circumstances, but the question is whether that's always the best way to run a government. And I think it's quite often the case that ground-up development of ideas is quite superior, lowers the resentment factor when you lose, and ideally improves the ultimate forms of government that are adopted, or at least the laws that are enacted.
We often talk here on the show about history, and this is an expansion of that talk we've had here for you listening. Legal history, and I think this, when you get the understanding of the legal history and embrace the points that Judge Sutton writes about in Who Decides States as Laboratories of Constitutional Experimentation, well, first and foremost, I can imagine everyone who reads Judge Sutton's book is going to bring up their respective state constitutions and read those maybe for the first time ever. And by doing that, along with reading the judge's book, I think we'll get a better understanding of there is a better way versus what we've seen become the accepted when it comes to the laws of the land, because the laws of the land don't have to entail the whole land, because when you do that, even platforms, level playing fields, say, call them what you will, it doesn't always answer the question at hand as best as it can. Who Decides States as Laboratories of Constitutional Experimentation? He sits on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Judge Jeffrey Sutton, thank you so much for a very strong education, a better awareness of our legal system and its needs, not just requirements. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's wonderful to be with you, Chris.